Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Davimo Vai Bhagavato. Hariram Savihagato. Bharavyaya Chabhuva. Krishno Yadukuru Dvaho. Tavimo Vai Bhagavato. Hariram Savihagato. Bharavyaya Chabhuva. Krishno Yadukura Dvaho. So today we're having two Krishnas. Translation. The Naranarayan Rishi, who was a partial expansion of Krishna, has now appeared in the dynasties of Yadu and Kuru in the forms of Krishna and Arjuna respectively to mitigate the burden of the world. Purport. Narayan is the Supreme Personality and Nara is a part of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayan. Thus the energy and the energetic together are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Maitreya informed Vidura that Nara, the portion of Narayan, has appeared in the family of the Kurus, and that Narayan, the plenary expansion of Krishna, had come as Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, with the purpose of delivering suffering humanity from the pangs of material burdens. In other words, Narayan Rishi was now present in the world in the forms of Krishna and Arjuna. I think it's clear in itself what Prabhupada is saying, how the Supreme Personality of Godhead is manifested in his own original form and simultaneously in his expansions or his plenary expansions or his partial expansions or even in his parts. And in this case, he is manifesting himself also through his separated parts. The living entity is described as Vibhinamsa. Amongst the parts and parcels of the Lord, there is Swamsa and Vibhinamsa. Swamsa means Swa-amsa, Swa his own, and Amsa part, so his own part. And Vibhinamsa, Vibhina means separate, so his separated parts and parcels. So the living beings are Vibhinamsa, and the expansions of the Lord are Swamsa. So the Supreme Lord sometimes manifests his divine energy, his divine Shakti, also through his Vibhinamsa, to his separated parts and parcels. In such a case, we speak of a Shakti Avesh avatar. So although we're dealing with a Jiva, that Jiva becomes an empowered Jiva beyond what is normal and human and becomes a direct instrument in the hand of the Lord. Different than the pure devotee who may also be an instrument of the Lord but who may not be as empowered. See, there are two considerations that we become surrendered to the Lord. The Lord accepts our surrender and then every living being who surrenders to the Lord, every devotee is empowered in a different way. So, therefore, the result is not the same at all. As we surrender to the Lord, it's not that everyone necessarily gets the same result. Although love of God is the common quality of all devotees who are becoming purified, nonetheless, how they manifest themselves in this world, that is, that's very individual. We have the example in this regards of the story of Hanuman and the spider. Hanuman, who was building a bridge to Lanka for Lord Ramachandra and grabbing one mountain after another. It is said that Hanuman was looking everywhere for mountains and throwing them into the ocean to build that bridge. Others were throwing rocks, As even said, Hanuman came to Vrindavan and wanted to grab Govardhan and throw Govardhan also, but a voice came from the sky and said, no, the bridge is finished now, we don't need any more. Otherwise Govardhan would have also gone on the bridge. But it also says that at the same time there was a spider who was working also, and this spider was throwing little crumbs. So Hanuman said, you spider, you know, get out of my way, don't you see that I'm doing some work here, you know. I'm building a bridge and you're just, you know, you're in my way and throwing these little crumbs. What will your crumbs do, you know? Look, I'm doing the real work here, so move over. But Lord Ramachandra said, no, Hanuman, no. He said, as far as I'm concerned, his work is equal to yours.
Despise me.
Yes, because he's working with all his might and so are you. And that's all the Lord is seeing. Because the Lord does not depend on any agent. The Supreme Lord has so many agents, either in the form of his expansions, either in the form of demigods, either in the form of empowered living beings to perform different tasks. But he doesn't need to do that at all. Of course not. If he desires, if Lord Ramachandra would have desired, a bridge would have just manifested. And there was a bridge, right? Or he would have walked on water, which also seems to be a religious thing to do. So, in that way, there were many possibilities. But what to do? The Lord desires to work through various living entities. Because his purpose is not just to build bridges or to win battles, but his purpose is to establish devotional service. And therefore, throughout the entire material arrangements, he's disseminating devotional service through such personalities. That Arjuna was the main hero through whom the battle of Kurukshetra was won by the Pandavas was not the foremost achievement. Not the foremost achievement. Although that was important, obviously, because then Yudhisthira could be the king, and under Yudhisthira, Krishna consciousness could be practiced. Still, the most important thing, obviously, was that the Bhagavad Gita was spoken. More important than the fact that Arjuna killed all these different apparently materialistic kshatriyas and who were a burden to the world. That was secondary. Primary was that transcendental knowledge was now available and it had been heard and registered by many. Sanjaya had heard it. Right, and Sanjaya, and the demigods had heard it, so many had heard it, right, that Bhagavad Gita being spoken. And therefore Bhagavad Gita, came again into the world. And that was more important than anything, more important than even the Rajasuya sacrifice, which was performed by Yudhisthira when he was on the throne. Of course, that Rajasuya sacrifice where Yudhisthira sent his brothers in all directions to conquer the entire world. They had that system of a horse with the royal insignia, and that horse would walk across the land freely, followed by an army. And anyone who would stop that horse, okay, he would be ready to fight. And wherever that horse walked, that was the land of the emperor. That was the system. So they conquered lots of lands in this way and established Yudhisthira as the emperor of the world. And then whenever this was happening, that one conquered a foreign country, that country had to pay tax. That was the system. The system was they had to pay tax to prove their subjugation to the emperor. So they all had to pay tax to Yudhisthira. And then, with the wealth from those tax payments, Yudhisthira organized the Rajasuya sacrifice, which was a very, very costly sacrifice requiring tremendous arrangements. It's quite interesting because we see that when the Muslims invaded India, we see that history described, and it's exactly based on the same principle, that the Muslim invaders, they simply set themselves up in Delhi, and they conquered a number of surrounding states, right? With an incredible number of soldiers, and they were very cruel, and they killed everyone, and raped all the women, and so on. In Rajasthan, there are stories of all the ladies just entering, of a whole town, just entering into the fire, one after another, a long line just going in, so that the Muslims wouldn't get them. So they were heavy stories, and I said, after that, many of the kings just decided that it was better to pay tax than to go to war. So they just paid tax. So in that way, the Muslim invaders became the emperor of India. And you find in Delhi still, you know, like remnants of the emperor, the Muslim emperor of India. But in reality, a large part, they never fought. They never did anything. And there was actually nothing going on. They just got some money. That was all. Some tax, really. Yeah. So that was on that, based on that old system, actually. It's interesting that that was still going on, right, at that time, around the year 1000, right? Well, that's 4000 years after Yudhisthira marriage. It was still going on like that. It's very interesting. At least I find it interesting. So the Supreme Lord, was also manifesting himself through Arjuna. It has been stated many times that Arjuna, although he was Senayorubhyor Madhye, between the two armies, and he was in a state of total bewilderment. His bow was gliding from his hand, and so on. He was in the state of visidantam. He was totally lamenting. And considering all that, one might wonder, how did Arjuna become bewildered like that if he was a devotee? So we understand that it was the arrangement of Krishna. Because Arjuna was a noble person. He was a soft-hearted person, being a devotee. Therefore, he did not just think, huh, these arrogant family members of mine, they deserve it, right? But he was actually thinking that, no, I have received so many benedictions from them. Right? They have been my teachers. Gurun ahatva, how can one actually kill one's teachers? How can anything good come from this? And after all, those who are dear to me are killed, everything will be tainted with blood. So how can I then possibly enjoy, even if I win? No, better I go to the forest. So he was definitely acting like a person with noble qualities. He also had good arguments, saying that the elders are upholding the principles of Dharma. And if the elders are killed, then what will become of the world? If you, which is again an interesting point, which was common knowledge in Vedic times. Now that's not so much known, but nor so much followed. Now the elders are senile and not totally with it, and the young are the only one who get anything done. Something like that. But at least, well, morality and Vedic standards, or even now, culture is relating to realization, to experience. Therefore the elders naturally are upholding the principles of Dharma. The young are having very strong passions and therefore need the protection of elders to stay on the path of Dharma. So Arjuna was recognizing the point. So he said, what will happen? The whole world will go to hell if we don't protect the elders. How can I kill them all? What kind of service is that to the world? If you're basically trying to imply that there is a greater interest than the interest of my family. All right. If you're implying, Krishna, that I should just forget my family relationships and instead I should see the higher cause, the benefit of the world, and that therefore they need to be killed, then my answer is that what benefit will there be for the world if I kill the elders? So it's interesting. Here we see how Arjuna is anticipating Krishna's reasoning and arguing and is ready to, is throwing up arguments on all kinds of levels. But, and they're good arguments. They're actually deep arguments and good arguments, noble arguments. Yeah. Still, Krishna comes with higher arguments, right, in the Bhagavad Gita, and shows the transcendental path. So, when Krishna needs to display transcendental knowledge, he needs an extraordinary soul to bring out all the issues. Just like nowadays, it is very, very fashionable in ISKCON to have interactive classes. And, well, they're okay, you know, if you keep people awake and get them going. But there is a limit, because ultimately, the audience who is not educated can only come up with so much. They can only come up with so much. Whereas, if a teacher is very qualified in terms of realization and learning, he can come up with issues that the less experienced, less educated, less realized audience never could come up with, even if they're intelligent. Therefore, one, to really successfully go into an interactive exchange, one needs a highly qualified partner to do it with. So in the same way, when Krishna goes interactive, after all, Bhagavad Gita is interactive, right? It's very modern in that respect, because it's an interactive exchange between Krishna and Arjuna. They both bring up their point. Then Arjuna is highly qualified. So Krishna needed a very qualified partner in the form of Arjuna to make his interactive Bhagavad Gita presentation. That's basically what was going on. Yeah, not bad. Should have told it yesterday in the college. A day late. Oh well, you know, what can you do? So Krishna, in this way, has his plans. And the whole material world is simply a stage. It is many times described like that in Bhagavatam as a stage. On that stage, the living entities are playing an old play. Basically, it's a variety on the theme of Romeo and Juliet, which is played again and again in different themes. Because it is mentioned in Bhagavatam that the material world is like a stage where the main act is sex life, and everything else is simply the background for that particular theme. That's all. It's just adding to that theme. But sometimes Krishna himself uses the world as the stage for his, for disseminating transcendental knowledge. And that is the ultimate purpose of the stage, actually. All along we thought the other theme, love stories, was what it was all about, right? Until suddenly we realized that it is Krishna revealing transcendental knowledge to the living beings. That is the purpose of the stage. Both, because the material world comes into being for the to fulfill the desire of the living entity. So in one sense, the living entity is the cause of the material world, because Krishna had no desire for the material world. But ultimately, in the design, it's already built in that Krishna will disseminate transcendental knowledge. So that is also the purpose of the world. So this two-pronged purpose is there in the material world. Krishna is always kind and merciful. In itself, otherwise, there's not much interest. So Lord Krishna is the merciful Supreme Lord, who creates this whole arrangement of illusory energy. Just like we have the sage Markandeya Rishi. And Markandeya Rishi was in his hermitage, and at one point Markandeya Rishi became intrigued to see the illusory energy of the Supreme Lord at work. And he requested for that. So some time went by, didn't happen right that moment, but some time later, there was a point where suddenly the conditions of nature changed, and terrible rains and thunder and so many things started, and the whole world, and it just didn't stop. And the whole world just began to flood. It just poured, and it just began to flood and flood and flood, and everything went under, and he was just in this huge ocean, and just roaming around in this ocean, being totally, totally gone, and going through all the hardships. It wasn't just that he's seeing the whole thing. He was in the middle of the whole thing, and he was just cold, wet, and so on, right? Somehow or other, apparently the only survivor, the only one. So he went through physical agony, through mental agony, and just considering that everything now is lost, and all his whole value system was being shocked. Right? Everything you believe in, that is so important, imagine that you are the last survivor on earth. Right? Everything has just been destroyed. At that point, everything that you believed in has no more value. Right? Practically, maybe Krishna is the last thing. So, in this way, everything other than Krishna suddenly becomes useless. You know, I'm a star. I want to be a star. A star? Yeah. How can you be a star all alone? Yeah. There's no more star. You know, just make your music all by yourself. You know, yeah. Sing for the stars, right? Well, that's when you know Krishna. Okay. Then you're saved. Yeah. So in other words, this whole experience where everything was destroyed, all the values, everything was being crushed there, right there. Everything became hollow and useless and meaningless. Everything. And so you can understand what kind of mental state of shock Markandeya Rishi was in. And then, as he was roaming like that, feeling very lost and alone, naturally, then suddenly, in the middle of it all, he saw Lord Krishna there on a leaf, right, floating. And he saw, in the form of a child, sucking his toe, right? Sucking his toe. Right? What is this, you know? He sees the Lord in the form of a child sucking his toe. What is the... And then after some time, the whole thing was over, and suddenly he's back in his ashram. Right? Now, you can understand that when
he saw the Lord sucking his toe, that it took a little while to fully register what the Lord was doing there and what he was showing. But that it is basically yatar bhaka pratibimba. That is like a boy who's playing with his own reflection in a little pond, right? The Supreme Lord is playing with his energies. He's playing with his own energies. He's sucking on his own toe, right? Ultimately. And in this way, the Lord, in a playful way, right, just indicated, I'm just playing with my energies. That's all. And, Maitreya had, Markandeya had something to think about, after all that. And it's a very interesting narration, to kind of really, make us think deeply of how so many things in our mind, in our psyche, are of value to us. We are into Krishna consciousness. Krishna is the one. But then how many other values we have next to that, right? Of good and bad, right? So many. And all this was just in the case of Markandeya, just for a moment being wiped out, nothing left. It happens to us also sometimes when your whole world collapses, right? Then suddenly, and when you lose everything you have, right? You can see people who lose, lose a family all at once, or lose all their wealth all at once, who lose their possessions all at once, who are driven out of their country, right? And the Russian aristocracy that had to leave when the Russian Revolution was over, and had to, wealthy refugees who had nothing left, right? And so on. So these are all examples of how one's whole world can be destroyed, or just you have everything in life, and suddenly you get a death notice, right? 3 more months. And suddenly everything has no more real meaning, right? The fact that you have money, the fact that you have everything, materially speaking, suddenly in one go, bang, changed, right? Just a little doctor's notice, like that. So these are the kind of situations where we can also experience how our value systems have to be totally changed. When you get a 3 months notice, well, suddenly the only thing that's really important is how you can make some progress in those 3 months to be better prepared at the time of death. That's all. That's the last thing that's important. And nothing else, right? And everything, all other priorities have changed. Just like that. Finished. So, this is, a similar thing happened to Markandeya Rishi in this respect. And that is very important because, that is Krishna's purpose. Krishna appears in this world to cut through all the illusion. Especially, it is said, Krishna comes to deliver the devotees. There is a dual purpose to annihilate the demons and to deliver the devotees. Right. It just doesn't mean that Krishna comes and just, at the end, you know, the end of the story is that Krishna, in a huge Pushpa Viman or something, takes all his devotees with him, right? And they all fly back together through the spiritual world. Krishna's main purpose was to come and take his devotees. No, Krishna is making arrangement to purify his devotees, because his devotees are all full of material contamination. They're all touched by illusion. And Krishna performs these pastimes simply for the sake of the devotees, to destroy their illusion. He kills demons for the sake of destroying the illusion. He goes through these whole dramatic performances, right, which he doesn't need to do, right? because all the demons could just dissolve, right? Dalita Hiranyakasipu, plop. No more Hiranyakasipu, right? Just disappeared, no problem. That Krishna could certainly do. Absolutely. He doesn't have to go through the whole trouble of taking a form of half man, half lion, going into a column and all that, and jumping out and ripping him to pieces and hang his horrible intestines around his neck, which, you know, is not the most pleasant part of the play, right? Neither for him nor for us. But anyway, the Lord is doing so to deliver his devotees, to purify his devotees. So this is the real point, that Krishna again and again appears in this world and fights with so many demons. Oh, a secondary purpose may be that he's enjoying it at the same time, because that's Krishna. When Krishna works, he has some fun also at the same time. But the primary purpose for Krishna to come and fight with the demons is not because he was so eager to fight, because he can also fight in the spiritual world. Sridham is very powerful. There's wrestling and all kinds of things. So it's not really necessary to wrestle with Chanura and Mustika for Krishna and Balaram. Right? They can also wrestle with the cowherd boys. And what's the difference? All right, they can't kill the cowherd boys. And of course, it was fun when to hit those wrestlers on the head. And as it said in the Hari Vamsa, as Krishna just hit, now I forgot. I think he fought with Chanura, but memory could mix it up. And anyway, then he hit one of these wrestlers hard on the head, and the eyes of that wrestler just popped out of the sockets, and were just hanging there on strings like that. Well, that's of course fun, you know, in a way, right? there is some fun in that, right? In giving it to a demon, that's there. But nonetheless, we are. That's not the main purpose. The main purpose is to deliver the devotees, to purify the devotees. So Krishna makes many arrangements to purify his devotees again and again. And for that is the main reason why he's... So it says to deliver the devotees means to purify the devotees, to bring them to the point where they find, where they become eligible to go back to Godhead. Because the illusory energy is so strong that pure devotees are still very rare. Manushyanam sahasresu. So out of thousands among men. Very, very rare. Out of so many devotees, very, very few are pure devotees. So it is Krishna who makes all these arrangements to purify his devotees. Just like in the verse Tesam Evanukam Paratam Aham Magyana Jam Tamaha, we find a description in Bhagavad Gita in the purport where it says that if a sincere devotee is not taking advantage of the instructions of the scriptures or of his spiritual master, then Krishna will make arrangements for his purification. You think a sincere devotee is not following the instructions of his spiritual master? What kind of sincere devotee is that? Right? But he is sincere because he's still trying to stay in devotional service. That's his sincerity. So not so much sincerity that he's completely surrendering to his spiritual master, but some sincerity that he is at least staying within the confines of Krishna consciousness. Then the Lord will do the rest. Maybe it's yasyaham manugrinami taddanam harije sanai. Maybe by taking away all his wealth, right? Maybe by destroying his whole material life, right? And just like Yudhisthira Maharaj is asking that first you took away Well, first we were almost, one of my brothers was almost killed, our father died, we almost were burned alive, then everything was taken away, sent into the forest, there we were almost eaten by a cannibal, right? And if we just go through it, we went through so many calamities, and if this is what you do to your devotees, then I wonder what you do to your enemies, which I find like an interesting portion of the Bhagavatam. It's kind of juicy. So, why? Yasyaham manugrinami taddanam harishe sanai is then the answer, that Krishna sometimes takes away the wealth of his devotee to destroy his last material attachments. So this is going on. Therefore, in India, many people say, "Oh yes, no, we will not worship Krishna because he takes everything away." Hari is he who takes everything away. No, no, we'll worship the demigods. That is better. No, your Krishna, we will not worship. You meet these people and you're preaching in India. They know. See, they know a lot. It's amazing sometimes how much they know. They know this very well. But they don't understand it fully, that it's not that Krishna always takes everything away. Because what is the answer to that? If they bring up that point, what can we say in response? We say, no, it's not like that. Because think of Sudama. He was very poor. And Krishna gave him everything. Sudama was so poor, he came to Krishna's palace in Dwarka. His wife had sent him, and she had given him this little chip rice also to give. Of course, Sudama totally forgot to give that chip rice, never thought of it. Sudama didn't ask also Krishna to give him anything. When Krishna asked him, "Sudama, why did you come?" He said, "Well, I hadn't seen you for so long. I just really desire to see you. I'm so happy to see you. Now all my desires are fulfilled." Right? And he was totally happy with that. But then Krishna said, "What have you got there?" And he said, "Oh, no, that's not for you. That's not for you." And Krishna said, no, what is it? And he snatched it, looked at it, said, "Oh, chip rice, my favorite dry chip rice." Right? Very nice. Then the goddess of fortune said, "No, my lord, this is not for you." Yeah. And anyway, just Krishna took that one little morsel and reciprocated by repaying the service offered in unlimited ways. And when Sudama went back home, he came to a place that he didn't recognize. What happened? Everything looked very different. Where there had been a very simple village area, an old hut, there was nothing now. Nothing. There was a palace now. Beautiful gardens and so on. And then this royal lady came surrounded by servants, and it was his wife, who he also didn't recognize. So Sudama then lived as a king. So this argument that Krishna always takes away wealth of his devotees doesn't stand. So in this way, Krishna has already foreseen all the excuses that people come up with, and in his pastimes he addresses everything. Actually, he deals with all the obstacles and mental attitudes that various people may have in finding reasons not to surrender, because Krishna in his pastimes actually is explained by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is responding to the mentalities of the different people and is dealing with those different mentalities. And in this way, Krishna is performing pastimes, actually dealing with the psychology of the conditioned souls and making arrangements in these pastimes to purify them. So it's very interesting how Krishna is really performing a drama. And he does it again and again. And let's... Okay, so he has a whole, how shall we call it? A whole workshop, a whole therapy program, right? Which he just performs throughout the universes to deal with the psychological problems,
Right? And it's some sort of playful therapy in which he engages the living beings. Okay, let's have the Agasura Lila, right? Just to purify the conditioned souls from their hard-hearted ruthlessness. Because Agasura is the emblem of being cold and self-centered. So cold-hearted that he simply saw other living beings like utensils, it is said. Living beings were for him simply utensils. Right? You are a utensil. Right? Utensils. I mean, it sounds really like something very sterile. The utensils. So it was Agasura and the utensils. Sounds like a band, right? And that was what was going on. Agasura and the utensils. And then the big act, right? Because nowadays they make a video clip, right? Along with the music. The big act is that Agasura eats all the utensils. would be good, right? It's just like, would be quite a popular video clip, I guess. Yes. And then in the middle, and then suddenly, you know, Krishna appears in the whole thing and just chokes him up and just finishes off the whole thing. Bang, right? This is the finale. Big success. Agasura and the utensils. In this way, Krishna is using his entertainment and really has a message. He's the original entertainer, right? Krishna is certainly an entertainer. He dances on the hoots of Kaliya, right? To entertain, because what is this entertainment anyway? This is just an imitation of what's going on in the spiritual world. That's what they do. There are literatures that in more detail describe the activities of Krishna and the cowherd boys, and there's a lot more than just leaping frog and all that. There are dramas being performed. They do dramas. And there's musical performances with it and everything. There's a whole... there are plays being performed right there. Quite complex things are going on. So the Leelas are much more expanded, right, than just they were imitating the sounds of or the animals and so on. Very much more. So in that way, all this playfulness that Krishna is displaying is actually also his invitation to us, right, that join the eternal plays and pastimes that are full of variety and taste, and leave the dry experience of the material energy. The time is up, so we will exit. Now, are there any commentaries? Or questions? Well, there are some descriptions of cowherd boy pastimes, and the exact title of that, of the particular literature, I can't remember it now. Dasarath Sutta translated one, right? And in which is called something like Prayo something ras, Prayo something ras, can I do so early in the morning? But within there, you read the introduction, and he mentions a few more. So that's a hint, and then from there you can go on. And he didn't have a desire.
You said did not.
Did not.
That's what it sounded like you said.
No, did not. Didn't.
Did not, yes.
Supreme Lord did have the desire. Did. Didn't.
So my question is, based on that very solid idea, how could the material world exist if you had no desire for it to exist?
Because this independent, right, little entity, just when the Lord was totally absorbed in the greatest fun and ecstasy, there was just one with a sour face, right? And that one, right, just didn't want to be part of the fun. So the Lord said, like, what are you doing? Don't do this, you know. Please, just get into it now. So for him, so the Lord never desired this material world, but because the living entity desired it, the Lord granted it. That's it. So Krishna has no responsibility, really, for creating the material world. Okay.
The moment that he signs it,
he's responsible.
Well, technically speaking,
he's the one. Not necessarily so. You make life so black and white, so simple. You know, if you would have been a president, right? I have never been president of a country, but if I'd been president of a temple, and you know, therefore, I understand the dilemmas and the predicaments of being Mr. President, right? And when you're Mr. President, right, you have to sign all kinds of bills that you just hate. You really don't like them, but the people want them. And what are you gonna do? Imagine, you know, I would decide that I ban all drugs from the United States of America, you know, or that I declare that homosexuals are out, right? Gay, you know,
you know,
right? You know, yeah. Okay, you know. So, you know, I can get the Bible Belt, which is a block of oats. But then again, you know, I might not make it on the West Coast, right? So what to do now? Huh? Yeah, what to do now? So, you know, you can't just do what you like, right? You have to also bring your audience with you. You have to bring the people with you. You have to, so Krishna, he doesn't want to force. Krishna wants the devotees to voluntarily surrender. So Krishna is not just going to sign heavy bills. Everyone has to serve here, okay? Or otherwise there's some, you know, gatekeepers at the gates of Vaikuntha, and they are not guarding people from coming in, they're guarding people from going out. Yeah. Not like that. And it's a beautiful place. Everything is wonderful, the spiritual world. But there's one funny thing, that there are gates and there's guards and they make sure nobody can go out. Right? And you just wonder what's going on. So then it would be all... So someone might wonder, what is it? A disguised jail. It's not. You can walk out anytime. Then you got to walk somewhere. Okay, walk into this material world. So it wasn't Krishna's desire, although he goes along with it. Krishna's not responsible, ultimately. Of course, Krishna does take responsibility for the material world. The living entity desires to be independent and desires a material world to enjoy, and Krishna gives it to him. But Krishna, who also gets involved in the whole thing, sticks a whole hidden arrangement in there to bring the living entity to transcendental knowledge. So that's the part he takes responsibility for. Okay, you can have what you want. But yes, I'm for it. And he sticks in this whole arrangement. No, that's okay, but that's just the Lord. That's just the Lord doing his job better than we can do it. We have to go out of the house to work. He just stays home, enjoys, and sends his expansion to do the work. It's just a better way to work. That's all. Isn't it? It's the kind of stuff you could go around and go spin in your mind for a long time. Yeah. Who's responsible? for all this, for all the. We're holding you responsible. By popular vote, yeah. It's your fault. It's your fault. Now, it's not just all your fault, but it's your fault. It's your fault as much as it's mine. Yeah, but it's like so strange to, you know, like even, look. I find that the term itself, right, is a contradiction. There's a contradiction in terms. They were eternally dormant, but now they woke up. So it wasn't eternal. So, you know, then where it begins. You're just making a beginning. You say they were first eternally dormant and then they were awake. But I just look at time in a different way, just like, you know, I turn it around and say, where does it begin anyway? So I begin at the wake up stage. So they were wake up and then at one point they were dormant. So it just depends where you begin in time. And can we state there's a beginning in time or is time a cycle? Right? An ongoing cycle just never stops. So what is it? What are you talking? Are you having a linear concept of time, or do you have a cyclic concept of time? Depends, huh? I'm looking at it from a cyclic perspective. So you're just looking linear. But linear seems to be a projection of the mundane, just because we're here going through our linear experience.
It has to do with past, present, future. Got him.
Got you, Garanga. Man, but it's a contradiction of terms. Contradiction of terms. I got you. Okay, think about it. Go home and come back tomorrow. Lick your wounds. But that's you make the beginning by the sleeping. I say the beginning is being awake. Anyway, okay. Now we're going into the detail. Like we just went to some big concepts. Now you want to like branch out into like the more what kind?
Has to do with what direction
Okay, I think Garanga, what you should do, you should invite Chris after this class and just get into it more detailed. But I'm happy with the answer myself. I like it a lot. Any other question? It's amazing, Garanga. How you managed to stick it in again. I didn't start you. I said, it's your fault. You're responsible, but he's responsible too. It's the two of you. Anyhow, I guess everybody's fault. It's all of our fault. Any other person who has a question? Okay, nice seeing you again. See you next time at the end of April and wish you well in between here and then. A few places around planet Earth. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.